Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. We want to thank a few of our supporters of the Cool Tools podcast, and this week we wanted to thank Bruce Allen Horn, Wayne Willis, and Riga. Thanks so much to Bruce, Wayne, and Riga for supporting us, and they're doing that through the Patreon platform. And if you would like to support the show, that would be great. You can go to patreon.com/cooltools, and there are a variety of different levels of support. Anything you offer really helps us with our editing, our transcribing, and all the other costs that go into producing this podcast, and allow us to interview wonderful folks like our next guest this week, Sonal Choksi. And Sonal is an editor-in-chief at Andreessen Horowitz, where she built the popular A16Z podcast, among other things. She's a former senior editor at Wired magazine. She directed content and community at Xerox PARC before that. She's also done PhD work and ethnographic research in developmental cognitive psychology on how teachers teach and how students learn. Such fascinating stuff, Sonal. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh my God, I am so excited to be here. I am such a huge fan of your work, Kevin's work. And actually, I own a copy of the book you guys put out, I think last year, on Cool the book. Yeah, I bought it.
Wow. That's so great. I love that.
Yeah. Well, we're so delighted that you are able to join us, and we're really looking forward to your suggestions that you can share with others.
I'm excited to do that. How do you guys want to start?
Well, let's start with that Instant Pot. Like you said, we probably discussed the Instant Pot before. It's very popular, but you have some specific information that you want to share.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the reason I wanted to talk about the Instant Pot is because I think people get so focused on it as a piece of hardware that they love, and they love cooking with it, as you know, and mm-hmm. I know there's been plenty of previous guests to talk about it. I, in particular, love the fact that it's a tool that draws a very rabid community around it. And as you know, it's actually, I think people often forget that a lot of hardware has its own kind of inherent communities and communities mm-hmm. are really having a moment right now. And by the way, I don't know if you've ever been, either of you have ever been on any of these Facebook groups around Instant Pots. They're crazy. The community fans are rabid, not just about it, but even adapting recipes. Like, they're very argumentative and amazing and opinionated. It's awesome to see.
That's cool. And the recipes around the Instant Pot?
Yeah. Well, and in particular, the ones that I'm interested in are the recipes for Indian food in Instant mm-hmm. Pots, because I don't think people know that you can do that. I can tell you guys some more about it, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Tell us.
Cool. So basically, you know, for anyone who's listening, who's made Indian food, it sounds really complex. You have to have all these spices and all these ingredients, but the reality is it's actually one of the easiest, most healthy cuisines you can eat. And Kevin, you know, Indian food. I mean, my God, how many times have you been to India? And you've really like eaten locally too.
Yes, I have. And I love Indian food.
I know. You have to go get Indian food.
And so the idea is you make it a one pot. You can do a lot of one pot cooking with Indian food, basically.
Exactly. And what's really counterintuitive is you would think that's only true for single item foods like biryanis and khichdis and dals, which are sort of rice and lentil based. Like, it's basically the equivalent of like a paella in a pot. But you can actually make a full on meal, like with multiple different ingredients in it, like chana masala, which is like garbanzo beans. And do, you know, combine different things. And that's really, I think, really important. And for those of you that don't know the history of Indian cooking, like, or how mothers teach daughters, which is not to be gender specific here by any means, but that is sort of traditionally what happens in India. There's a lot of like of contortions around the steps and combos and proportions. And my mom and I used to fight all the time growing up, because she'd be like, you know, there's no recipe, just eyeball it. And I would be like, give me a freaking measurement. And so what's really amazing about it is that Instant Pot actually democratized cooking for us. And in a way that it didn't feel like this, you had to be this inheritor of this long, you know, thousand year tradition to make Indian food. It's kind
I see. You mean because it was new and different, the old traditions didn't apply, and everybody kind of was starting at square one and having to invent new recipes, and so there wasn't any privilege of the traditions.
Exactly. It leveled that field. And also, by the way, if you know about if you know about analog pressure cookers in India, and even in America, they're really scary. They're not safe. Like my mom, I would hear these horrifying whistles when they were ready to have the dal ready, and rice. And she would also freak me out about like, what, stay away. Your face could blow off if you're like too close to this, which doesn't exactly make it appropriate.
Yeah,
and people make bombs out of them too.
Right. So is there a place where people can go to, is there a place where people can go to for Indian recipes for Instapot?
Oh my God. I wish I had actually remembered to do a search for the name of a book, because I actually bought my sister-in-law. I could look it up super quick. A book on Amazon.
Okay, we'll put it in show notes afterwards.
Yeah, great.
We can add that afterwards to the show notes. Okay, so what you're suggesting though is that Instapot is kind of really ideal for making Indian foods, particularly if you haven't made it before.
Yes, but I would also say it's even if you have made it before, because you can actually do things faster, better, and we can get over our preciousness of all these different steps and combos and just really enjoy the food instead of making a production out of making it.
Do you have any recommendations for, there's so many different kinds of curry powder that I make Indian food with my Instant Pot. Do you have a particular curry brand that you recommend for Instant Pot cooking?
Yeah, very good question. So Mark, you know, this is probably a longer conversation than you can imagine, because curry is a very misleading word, because it can mean so many different things. There's not really technically a one size fits all kind of curry powder, but what you do absolutely need as your ideal, you need like a spice kit, which has like five essential ingredients, which would be red masala, so like pepper, yellow masala, which is like turmeric powder, brown masala, which is basically cumin and cilantro powder, either one of those works. And then brown, kind of dark brown powder, which is garam masala. So if you're going to go with the quote particular curry powder, I would suggest getting or making from scratch a garam masala. And then of course you need like the two seeds, which are either mustard seeds, which you need in almost every Indian food, and or some, how do you say jeera seeds? Cumin seeds, which are kind of the essential ingredients. And every cook has actually a tray of those five.
That's interesting. So you don't recommend buying the off-the-shelf pre-mixed curry powder?
In fact, I absolutely, especially in an Instant Pot world, do not. Because the whole point of the Instant Pot is it lets you easily combine different ingredients. Mm-hmm. But if you're sort of combining a single ingredient inside the Instant Pot, I don't think you get as exciting the flavor and mix that you get from combining them.
So that's so good to know.
And do you have a source for those five or six spices that you recommended? Do you just shop around at wherever, Whole Foods, or is there a brand or a source that you would recommend for those five spices?
Well, if you were to ask my mom, she would say there is a brand, and she's so particular because she only buys her spices from India and like carries them back. It's so ridiculous. I am not at all. I'm very agnostic about my brands. To me, they're all the same as long as they're fresh and the dates are fresh is what I look for. So I would recommend you can go anywhere online, any local ethnic grocery store. Yes, Whole Foods does carry many of these ingredients. More expensive there, quite frankly. I just go to a store in San Francisco, which is where I live, called J-Ho. It's like a local market inside a Safeway. It's really inside a Safeway complex. It's really easy to get to and really good spices. And it's very rundown and tiny.
Okay, so mom and pop. For you, the freshness of the spice is more important than the brand of the spice.
Exactly. And in fact, if you can eyeball this, you can look at the fine milling of it to see, like sometimes some of the really good cooks will buy whole spice versions of things, like whole black pepper, for instance, and then hand kind of mill them with the rock, you know, like on a thing. So if you really want to
see mortar and pestle.
Yes, mortar and pestle. Thank you. I'm like, what is that thing called again?
All right. Well, that's a great suggestion. So Indian food in a Instapot. So what's another tool that you're excited by?
Yes. So, I don't know if you guys made notes, but my next two that I had on the list were this Hoibo face mask. And then I put up Substack and also a laptop. I decided to move Zoom down because I feel like you've had enough people talk about it in the past.
Sure.
So let's hear about the face mask.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if you guys, I mean, I haven't listened to recent episodes. I have heard some of the older episodes, but have you had people talk about face masks before?
We did have one guest on the one of the previous episodes talk about a mask called a Henry mask that is like an origami kind of mask. And it's a really cool one.
Ooh,
the one you have here is awesome too.
Well, cool. Because the one I have to recommend is probably similar, but also different. I don't know that brand. So I have a tool to recommend, a cool tool to recommend, which is this Huibo face mask. And it's a Canada-based brand, very local makers. Everything's handcrafted inside their Toronto studio. I have no stakes or interests. It's just a pure fan and appreciation of what they do. You know, they describe this focusing on a balance of beauty, design, craft, and functionality, which just sounds like a bunch of, you know, buzzy words. But what's really interesting to me is that their work is inspired by the structure and strength of workwear, but it's incredibly light and elegant and beautiful. And they have very clearly defined shapes, sometimes even origami-like. And I think this is super important because honestly, I think if we're really going to make masks more widespread, they should not be just a utility, just like we don't wear our clothes like a utility. We don't even wear our devices as a utility, right? Like people have iPads and iPhones and covers that they customize. And so I really strongly believe masks need to be just like fashion, where you wear shirts, jeans, hats, everything. And so these are fashionable, but more importantly, they're so comfortable because they're lightweight, they're pure linen. So, you can breathe through them, which is what I love about them. I mean, I'm sure you guys have experienced most masks are not very breathable.
Yeah.
And so is this, it says it's $40. Is that $40 for one mask?
Yes, that is expensive. I agree. So here's what I would argue about that. And I agree with you, Kevin, because I did hesitate before putting it on my list because I was like, this is a little expensive for a mask. The reason, and I also, it's the most expensive mask that I own as well, because most of mine are much cheaper. The reason I went ahead and coughed up for that is because it's washable. And so here's how I think about it. You buy a pair of jeans and you wear it over and over and over and over again. You wear it so much, they're so worn, they're so comfortable, and you get a lot of use out of them. And the problem is, I think we treat masks as a bit too disposable and they need to be more fundamental. So it's almost like a pair of jeans for your face. So that's how I justified it. Now, the other reason I justified it, but I agree it's expensive, is because they do hand make everything and I love supporting local makers and people who are very local in their making and manufacturing and their invention. They also invent a lot of material technology. So that's one of the reasons that I feel like I'm paying a little bit for their R&D. But yes, I do think it's expensive for the record.
So this is the Huibo contoured linen face mask.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The ones we're looking at have a natural color.
Yes, sage is my favorite. It's very subtle, but it has like a hint of color.
Right.
It's just like underwear. One other thing is they have this tagline, which I just remember. It's called made to take care of one another. And I love this idea because we think of making as very inward out, like this expression of this thing you have to make. And masks by definition are very outward in. Like they're preventing they're keeping other people healthy, which is what I think is so beautiful about it.
Right. I think one thing I would say about masks is that maybe even a couple of months ago, we kind of imagined that masks were going to be temporary, but
exactly.
I suspect masks are going to be around for a while.
And in fact, that's why I would argue we should think about investing in them the way we do clothing. And that can mean we can go on the lower end to the higher end, however each person decides to outfit themselves, but we should invest in them.
Yeah, we'll have a new section in your closet called the mask rack. And you'll have all your different colors.
Exactly. Trust me, if I could afford to buy way more of these in every color, I would. But I do have a huge variety of masks already. Think of them as fashion now.
Okay. So that's great. So let's talk about a lap desk.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do this one kind of straightforwardly. So the reason I put a lap desk on this is because I know people talk about different types of lap desks. You have wire cutter reviews and, you know, you guys do all these wonderful, like, cool tools recommendations. My issue is that particularly in this time of the pandemic, many people have had to go remote very suddenly. And many people, including me, are stuck in small apartments without a dedicated home office setup. So you have to double up your space. Like I am in a one-bedroom apartment, so I do not have a dedicated office space. And so what's great about this is I actually bought it originally for crafting projects because I don't like when you're working on projects where the desk is a little too far. Like you need to be a little closer to the metal. So what I love about the lap desk / lap tray is it's really close to you, but super comfortable. And it's extremely functional as an actual desk for your laptop.
Right. So let's if you could just take a moment and describe what this looks like to our listeners. So it's like how big, how high, what's it made from?
So it's basically the size of like a large, very over large placemat, maybe is how I describe it. It's made of different woods. And the one I have, I believe the top is walnut. And what I love about that is that the grain is, it adds like a natural friction. So things don't slip off of it like they do from these uber overly plastic lap desks. And then underneath it attached by Velcro, which also makes it very comfortable. You can easily clean it, you know, wash it. It's not something you use every day that you can't clean, which is another problem with many lap desks out there. Many lap desks out there feel like they're just these utilitarian, like, you know, gross plastic things. This is so enjoyable because there's a soft pillow underneath that has like a canvas kind of pillowcase that you can unzip and wash. And the inside is this sort of foamy, ball-y material that's very, it has like a form, but it's not rigid. So it naturally conforms to your lap. So it feels extremely flexible. Like you're not, here's the thing, like when you put a lap desk on your desk, it feels like a foreign thing sitting on your desk. It doesn't feel like an extension of you. And this lap desk to me feels like an extension that's naturally sitting there. It also has, by the way, a slight indent in the upper right corner. So unlike these overly dedicated plastic lap desks where you have like a proper cup holder, this has like a slightly indented square in it where you can put like paper clips or your phone or a cup of coffee if you want. And it does the job. So that's how I describe it.
So it's sort of like, it's like a wooden tray that's sitting on a foam cushion that's been covered in very nice fabric. And so when you put it on your lap, instead of there being a hard surface on your lap, you have a soft, like a pillow or a cushion sitting on your lap between you and your laptop, whatever you're working on.
Exactly.
And it's about maybe 3 inches thick or so?
I would say about 2.5. 2.5, because by the time it conforms, it's not too high. It's just sort of like you can sit cross-legged and sit very comfortably. It's about 2.5 inches, I would say, almost 3 inches total. But it kind of blends into your skin, which is what I love about it. Like it just conforms, it settles in around you, which is what makes it so joyous to use.
Right. I know that when I'm traveling in hotels, I often would use a pillow, just a plain pillow as my lap tray.
Exactly.
Putting a laptop on your lap is gets hot for one thing.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And you need a harder surface than just a pillow. And honestly, like work at home is not a temporary situation. Like we can't afford to be unhealthy or uncomfortable about it, which is, you know, pretty important about it. So there's something really enjoyable about that. And by the way, it's for everything. It doesn't have to only be for your laptop. Like you can do craft projects on it, which is what I originally did on it. You can do just about anything. You can eat on it. If you want to eat on your TV or something, you can do just about anything. And it's very adult, by the way, because some of these things look like they're college dormy things and you're not in a way that you want it to be college dormy. It feels beautiful, like a piece of like a George Nelson or, you know, Nakashima table. You know, it has like an elegant kind of look to it.
Okay. And I see that it seems like it may be coming from England, but it's about $68. So tell us your fourth tool.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been talking about objects so far, hard things, physical things, soft things. Now I want to do one that's at least software and online. And my fourth tool is Substack. Have you guys ever had someone talk about Substack on Cool Tools yet?
I don't think so.
Oh,
so tell us about it.
Great. So Substack is a tool which makes it easier for writers of all kinds to start a newsletter, including manage your subscriptions, payments, and more. And so before, like if you were a journalist and you wanted to start your own newsletter or own your own audience a bit, first of all, you don't really own your own audience because you're intermediated by books and you know, indirect channels, media, journal articles, whatever. And then secondly, if you wanted to set something up, you have to do all the plumbing yourselves, like, you know, set up the payment infrastructure, the list management infrastructure. People take a huge cut of all that, and it's not very optimized. And honestly, not to be stereotypical, some of the more creative people I know are not necessarily the ones who want to also do all that. And so that's what Substack does, is it sort of democratizes and allows anyone to be able to start a newsletter, which honestly, increasingly today, and Kevin, you of all people should know this better than anybody, I think of as mini media outlets, kind of true to your original idea of 10,000 true fans. Like, you can actually subsidize your work with very dedicated fans, and Substack basically helps because you can do both free and paid newsletters. And the other thing that's great about it is it expands the definition of a writer, because I think for a lot of people, we have this traditional notion that it has to be like someone who went to journalism school, but there are a lot of academic experts. There's other people who are just learning as they do things, who don't have an outlet or even credentials necessarily, but they do have a lot to say and they build a following. So Substack is amazing because it's basically enabling all these amazing writers to create full-time and honestly very successful, way more than even their media jobs and other careers. So I think it's a very exciting tool to me. And full disclosure, the company I work at, Andreessen Horowitz, is an investor in them. But for the record, I've been a huge fan of them before we even invested in them. And I've been very excited about that. And I started a couple of newsletters there too, which I'll tell you guys about later. I mean, Kevin, I mean, I don't know if you know, your views on sort of this idea, because you yourself are the one who's really coined, you know, this notion of 10,000 true fans, even 1,000 fans.
Right. So yeah. So Substack is this like some other services that now enable you to do newsletters like MailChimp and stuff. Substack has an additional layer of being able to manage subscriptions and paid work and all the kind of tracking and analytics that you would want if you were trying to do something professionally. And I think you are right that we are kind of moving into another period when people want to take advantage of these tools that disintermediate and allow them to, instead of having to publish with a magazine like Wired, they can go directly to their audience themselves in a kind of more personal way. And so Substack is one of several places that are trying to enable this. And do you want to put it in context with some of the other companies that are also trying to do this at the same time?
Sure. Yeah. No, I absolutely will. I absolutely will. And then totally tell me if you want me to cut it too, because I genuinely picked it because I purposely didn't want to pick any A6 and Z things, except this one I am very passionate about. What I was going to say is, you know, there have been tools and there are lots of other tools out there, like MailChimp acquired Tiny Letter. There's Patreon, you know, you guys are on Patreon for supporting things, et cetera. There's a number of tools. I think there's another tool, Revue or something like that, that does newsletters.
Revue, which is what we use for our newsletters. We're using Revue.
Oh, okay, good. I didn't mean to mispronounce that. I've only seen it spelled, never pronounced.
Well, I don't even know how to pronounce it. That's how I pronounce it.
It makes sense because it sounds like it's a play on the word review. And they're all great because they have wonderful functionality and different things. There's Memberful. There's things that work for different people. I would say two things that are unique about Substack specifically are they recently added more services. And this is because they've had so many journalists come on their service. It's actually intended for writers. So that's really important. It's not just any generic mailing for any community. It's really intended for writers. So they recently rolled out this legal as a service, like Defender. So if you're a journalist and you don't work at a media outlet where you have these first rate lawyers to provide, you know, advice, direction, and defense, you can actually consult through this program to get those resources. So they're trying to help build this kind of ecosystem for a lot more independent media outlets to operate. But I think the more important thing, Kevin, and this kind of goes to the point that you were saying about media, where we're having a moment again, and you've long observed this. I think the thing to me that's super important here is that we are entering a time where, for better or worse, and probably a lot of people would argue for worse because of they're very attached to the nostalgia of the early web. And I am not one of them because I was part of that. But I think it's actually kind of amazing that we're in a time where we don't have to have everything in the public square. You can have this sense of intimacy that feels one-to-one, but that actually is one-to-many, just like podcasting, what we're doing right here. Like, it's a conversation between the three of us, but it's actually can happen among thousands of people. So that's, to me, the broader trend that's super important here.
One area that Substack, as far as I can tell, has really taken the lead is in developing tools for trying to help people who are writers make a living doing this. And so they really stress, while they have free versions, they kind of give a path towards starting to monetize and have subscriptions. And if you like media that's not ad supported, looking at Substack and the newsletters that it's offering is actually a good venue, because they're not currently an ad driven model. It's subscription supported model.
Exactly. And some people, you know, they like setting up their own technology and payments infrastructure, but I would say a majority of people don't. And this is where I think this is another example where technology tools, I mean, the theme to me and all the tools that I care about are very democratizing in a certain way. And I think the other thing that I think is really kind of neat about it too, this general trend, is that, you know, we're seeing a time where media, it's no longer just traditional big media outlets. Individuals can become media outlets. Companies are media outlets. And you, Kevin, got onto this very early. Mark, you know this firsthand with what you've done with Boing Boing and various other communities you've been involved in. But a lot of writers I know, they don't know how to do that. Like, it's not because they're not good and they're not smart. It's just that they know how to write, but they don't know how to do everything else. So I think it's very exciting to me when something democratizes something for everybody else.
Yeah. So for the listeners out there, is if you have something you're writing about and you think there might be a way to eventually support it with paid users, Substack is something to investigate. And again, you can start free. You can have your thing become free and then move over time towards a payment model. So I think it's a cool tool.
Cool tool. I love it. You guys, I do have two backup tools.
Why don't you tell us about one more? We'll give a bonus. So what's the fifth
tool? I love it. I'm so greedy. I always want more out of everybody and everything. I'll take five instead of four.
Yeah, I would love to hear it.
So my fifth bonus tool is something called the Doo-Wop Reverse Eyeliner. They also have a reverse lip liner. And this is a cool tool, a very cool tool, I would say, that creates a barrier on your face. So makeup won't travel down or around. It stays put where it is. And to give you guys some context.
Interesting.
Yes. And to give you some context, because I'm not sure how much makeup you've ever put on in your life. Maybe if you go to Burning Man, you put it on. But otherwise, you probably haven't. Not to assume, though, because I'm a big believer in all genders experimenting with makeup. When I put eyeliner on, usually you just put like eyeliner or eyeshadow and you just like put this thing directly with an application wand. If you put lipstick on, you just put it directly on your lip. Sometimes people put a thing called lip liner to give it a bit of definition and extra layer of color. What the Doo-Wop reverse liners do is you can create a little bit of a boundary barrier around your lips and under your eyes. Because when you put makeup on, sometimes if you have like a loosely milled fine eyeshadow powder, much like an Indian spice that's finely milled, it falls into like the cracks of your crow's feet or your under eye lines. And it kind of smudges and looks messy. You look like, you know, what's his name from, oh my God, Alice from Alice in Chains. What am I forgetting? Anyway, you look like basically total metal, which it's not the look you're going for. It's not the one you want. It basically acts as a barrier. And it's like, it seems like it's kind of waxy, but it's made out of kombucha or macadamia oil or some kind of weird combo of ingredients. And it's applied through like a pencil. And the other cool thing about it is, because it's in that shape, is it also acts as an eraser. So if you make a mistake, you can kind of clean it up. And I think of makeup as like the same thing as like pencils, Blackwing pencils or you know, school supplies. It's very exciting because it's the same kind of tool in a different category.
That sounds great.
So the idea is you have this pencil that has kind of a waxy center to it, and you use that pencil to block out or to kind of mask anywhere where you don't want your eyeliner to go.
Exactly. It's a reverse. It's a mask in the sense that you intended, which is like a reverse effect.
Right.
Creating a
like masking tape.
Right. Exactly. Like masking tape or in like the manufacturing side type of mask. Exactly. In the same exact context. And
you put this where you don't want your eyeliner to go.
Exactly. Like negative space of makeup art, if you want to think about it that way. I don't know how much you guys know about makeup either, but I will say this too. You know, fun fact, I do very strongly believe makeup is a technology tool, just like everything else. It is also the one area that actually hasn't significantly seen innovation. And look, all the beauty companies will tell you otherwise because they spend millions of dollars a year in R&D. But honestly, if you really think about it, the way we apply makeup today is the exact same way that we've been applying it since like 5,000 years ago. It hasn't really changed. And that's a problem to me. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, we're waiting for that great scene in The Fifth Element.
Oh my God, the makeup palette. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, she holds it up to her eyes and bing, there it is.
Kevin, that's exactly what I was thinking of. It's literally Lilu. There's a scene where she comes awake and she's wearing that cool like orange Jean Gaultier outfit. It's super Burning Man. And basically puts up like this makeup palette to her face, like a cover. And then all of a sudden it like perfectly customizes her makeup look and you peel it off. That is the moment I'm waiting for. We are so far from there, which is insane to me, given how advanced we are in technology. We haven't advanced here.
So all you out there, if you have an idea, you can pitch Sonal.
I wish I were actually an investor. Unfortunately, I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, I focus on.
Well, you can connect if someone really has a good idea.
Yeah, and frankly, I will be a very early user. Although, actually, I don't think I take that back. I don't want to be a beta user for other people's weird makeup projects. No, totally, they should totally reach out to me.
Well, that's great. That's a great bonus. Thank you for extending the offer to us. So tell us what you are excited by these days.
Yeah, well, personally, you know, of course, I'm very excited by podcasting. I could talk about that forever, and audio. Very excited about all the audio tools. You guys have a rule on your show that things have to be public, so I can't share private tools yet, but next time I will.
Tell us about your podcast. What is the name of your podcast that so people can check it out?
Oh, so the podcast that I run at Andreessen Horowitz is called the A16Z Podcast, and you can find it on...
It's A16Z, right?
Yep. It's a numeronym for Andreessen Horowitz. So it has the first and last letter, A and Z, and then 16 characters in between. So it's called A16Z.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't come up with that. It was something that they use as a nickname, but the show just kind of default became named that. I also have a podcast that I do about weekly, bi-weekly called 16 Minutes, which is basically news takes on tech trends and teasing apart what's hype, what's real on sort of the long arc of innovation. And then personally, I have two newsletters, one called Art Dev, which is basically there's a play on the word dev as in developer, dev as in devdas or devi, like God in India, you know, developing in real life. And the idea is because I hate how people make art so inaccessible to everyone. Like it has to be intermediated by gallerists and curators. And the language people use about art is so highfalutin and postmodern weird crap. It's just weird. And so I just think I'm trying to write about art in a way that's accessible and that lets you feel it viscerally, not just intellectually. That's what Art Dev is. And then my other newsletter, which is new, is called World Building. And that's fully devoted to everything that's related to world building for creators of all kinds. So not only in the narrow sense of traditional science fiction and fantasy, games, VR, but world building, even in app buttons or movies and how people do lighting. And I kind of curate all that because those are the two key words that I'm obsessed with and that are kind of my driving mission for all.
I'm going to sign up for that one right away.
Oh, wait, I love that.
World building. That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I presume that these are kind of available wherever podcasts are available. What is the best place for
people? Oh yeah. For people to find all this, I guess they can go to my Twitter handle, SMC90, or my website, sonalchoksi.org. The first two, the podcasts are basically available where all podcasts are found anywhere, all the major apps, any minor apps as well. And then my personal newsletters are on Substack, Art Dev and World Building. And you can find everything about me at sonalchoksi.org or my Twitter handle, which is just SMC90, my first email address.
Okay. Wow. It's fantastic. You're World Building. Art Dev, your A16Z, reverse makeup. I think you've got it covered.
You're doing tons of really cool stuff. You're like such a prolific, fascinating person.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sonal, for joining us and sharing what you know and your favorite picks. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, you guys. Thanks for this. And I love Cool Tools.
Hey, everybody, it's your host, Mark, and I wanted to thank you for listening to the Cool Tools Show. And I also wanted to let you know that we've got a lot more going on at Cool Tools than just this podcast. We also have the Cool Tools website, which has a new tool review every day, and you can get there by going to cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters that you can subscribe to, and you can subscribe to those from the Cool Tools page. We have this podcast that you're listening to right now. We also have a YouTube channel where we review tools. Check that YouTube channel out by going to youtube.com/cooltools. And one of the things I'd like to ask you is, if you're really enjoying everything that we are producing, go to our Patreon page and support us there. You can sign up and give us as little as $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that we get from Patreon goes towards a lot of things. We transcribe our podcast interviews so that you can read them online. We pay for editing of our podcasts and for our videos. We pay our contributors. We have video production costs. We have equipment costs. We have hosting costs. And the money you give us through Patreon also goes to support Cool Tools Lab. Anything you give is a huge help. And one of the things that we do is, if you are a contributor to Patreon, we'll give you a shout out on air. And so I have a few people here to thank this week. Mark Lyonage, Micah Gates, Monty Zukowski, Patrick James McNally, Robert Cohen, Scott, Spence Lloyd, Steve Avery, Steve Golden, Steve Levine, Tom Hess, William Phillips, Aaron Nipper, Dharab Patel, Glenn Mercer, Jay Walker, Jeff Bonair, Ryan Jarrell, Pat Daly, Patrick Kennedy, Troy Wallett, Mike Camerate, Nicole Harkin, Tim Youssef, Scott Reed. Thanks all of you for supporting Cool Tools. And if you would like to have a shout out, go over to the Patreon page and sign up. And thanks for listening to the Cool Tools podcast. We'll see you next week.